Today is Masechet Avodah Zarah Daf Yud, and we will begin on Daf Tes Amud Beis, the last words. Hu Shtar Dav Kasabei. There was a shtar that was dated Shit Shnin Yiserta, 6 years later than it was actually written. Sav Rabbanan Kamei de Rav Lameima. So Rabbanan, who were examining the shtar, assumed Hashtam Ochahu, that it was a post-dated shtar, and therefore it should be held up until the date written to the shtar. Which means, as we've learned many times, shtaris, documents as they are written, have dates. And the purpose of the date is because the loiva, when a shtar is written, that he owes the malva money, since this obligation is committed to writing in a shtar, it creates a lien on all his properties. And therefore, for example, should a loiva sell one of his properties or sell all of his properties after he takes on the loan, and then when the malva comes to collect his debt, the loiva doesn't have the ability to pay that loan, the halacha is that the loiva's properties that were sold, given there was a lien on them, are collectible by the malva. Here, with the date of the shtar, as we just said, was 6 years later than the actual date that it was written, post-dated shtar, the Rabbanan assumed that the malva was being nice to the loiva. And even though immediately when the loan took place, a lien on all of his property should have been created, the malva gave the loiva a 6-year delay in creating that lien. Rav Nachman, Hash Safra Dukna Kasvei. Absolutely incorrect. The shtar was written precisely. And again, as the Mefarshim explained, it's highly unlikely. Of course, there is a concept of a post-dated document, but unless we have clear proof that indeed this is a post-dated document, we don't assume that it's a post-dated document. Because it's unlikely that the malva would give that waiver to the loiver. Hai safra dukna kasvei. It's written precisely with the date. We see that it's written 6 years later. V'hanach shitshnin. These 8 years that are later represent the malka be'elam. As we discussed in the previous year, the dates, the shtaros were written based on the dating system of the Greek monarchy. And as we learned in the previous year, most shtaros were written that the Greek monarchy became dominant 380 years before the Korban. But actually, it didn't happen 380 years before the Korban, as we said. It was really 386 years before the Churban. So why is it considered 380 years? Because the first 6 years, the Greeks were only dominant in the province of Elam. And therefore, when we start counting from their monarchy, we only start counting from when they were dominant in the entire world. Says the Gemara, says Rav Nachman, Hai Safa Dukna Kasvei, he was very precise. V'hanach shit shinin de malchu be'elam. These 6 years represent the 6 years that the Greeks already began their rule in Elam. That we, when we date documents based on the Greek dating system, indeed write only from when Greek Yavon became powerful on the whole world. And who kachashvle, but this cipher who wrote the shtar was being precise. And therefore, Bismanikasvei, he wrote the date from when the Greeks came into power. The Tanya, as the Brisa says, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Sheish Shonim Molch Be'elam, first the Greeks were only powerful in Elam, V'akach Poshta Machosim B'cholayim Kuloi, and afterwards they became powerful in the entire world. And therefore, it's not to be understood that the shtar is post-dated shtar, but rather the way to understand it is that the shtar has a proper date, because the date represents for when the Greeks came in power, not when they came in power for the old world, but when they came in power already in Elam. Ask the Gemara, Maskler of Achbar Yaakov, who says that that's the way to understand the Shtar? Maidel Malchus, Yvonne Meninen, how are we so certain that we count from the Greek monarchy? Just was saying that this Shtar doesn't represent from when the Greeks became dominant in the whole world, but it begins counting from when the Greeks were dominant in Elam. Because again, as we keep on repeating, we don't want to assume that this shtar is a shtar me'ucher. We don't want to assume that this shtar is a post-dated shtek, a shtar, unless we have to. Dilma, perhaps the way to count this, we start counting from Yitzis Mitzrayim Meninen. We start counting from when Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim. Now, if we count from when Yitzis Mitzrayim was, then everything is interesting. If we look from when Yitzis Mitzrayim happened until the time when Yavon came into power, not when they came into power with Elam, they came into power for the whole world, that is exactly 1,000 years. How do we have 1,000 years? Because it was 480 years from when they left Mitzrayim until the Beis Hamikdash was built. Then the first Beis Hamikdash stood for 410 years, so we have 890. Then there were 70 years of Golus. Not 1,000 years, 1380. There was exactly 1,380 years. Then there was 70 years of the Churban between Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni. Then Bayis Sheni stood for, at that point, the Beis Hamikdash was built, which comes out, again, let's figure it out, 480 plus 410 is equal to 890. Then we have 70 years of Golus Bavel is 890 plus 70 is 960. Then we have 420 of the Bayis Sheni is 1380. If we make that cheshbon, we have that the date of 380 years, which was when we keep on saying Malchus Yavon started prevailing over the Torah world, coincides exactly with the 1,000th anniversary for when Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim. So we're back to where we started. It could be that this person who was writing the Shtar was not using the Yavon system, was using the Yitzis Mitzrayim system, and if you use Yitzis Mitzrayim as your starting date, then this shtar is indeed a shtar me'ucher, because this was written 6 years later. Again, let's read the Gemara. Maskler of Achba Yaakov, Maidel Malchus Yavon Meninen, who says that the person who was writing the shtar was writing for when Yavon came into power, Dimla Yitzis Mitzrayim Meninen, maybe he was writing it from when they left Mitzrayim, V'shafgal Alfa Kama, and he just, as we learned in the previous year, they didn't focus on the thousands. V'nakde Alfa Basra. And he only started with the second thousand. The date when Yavon became powerful over the whole world coincides with the 1,000th anniversary of Yitzis Mitzrayim. And again, V'hai Me'uchahu. And the date, which is, this shtar will be a post-dated shtar, answers the Gemara. Omer of Nachman, B'goyle Ein Moiner Ela Malchus Yavon Bavad. Nobody wrote a shtar using the date of Yitzis Mitzrayim as the starting point. Who suffer? Answers, says the Gemara. The Chuyi Kamatchalei. They just was pushing him off by saying that nobody uses anything but the Yavon date. This Machlokas Rishonim. What does the Gemara mean when we say that only the date from when the Greek government came into power is meant? Some say that all stars in all countries, even when they weren't living under Yavon domination, use the Yavon system. Others say it was all documents besides Gittin. Given that Gittin are so important, that the governments that they lived in were makbid, they should use, they were particular, they should use the local dates. For anything else, they allowed the Yavan dates to be used. Says the Gemara, Amar Vina, Masnis and Damideka, we actually have a raya from the first Mishnah in Masechet Rosh Hashanah that they used the Greek government date system, the Tanan. The Mishnah says at the beginning of Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Becha ben Nisan Rosh Hashanah l'Melochim, Rosh Chodesh Nisan is Rosh Hashanah for Melochim. That means, let's say somebody became a king a couple of days before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. When Rosh Chodesh Nisan comes, it's counted as year two. Ulur Golem, what does that mean? What it means is as follows. We know that if somebody makes a donation, the Torah says, there's a law about Ta'achar that you're not allowed to delay in paying it. But there's a specific order. The halacha is that you have to pay it up within three regalim, but it's not any of the Shalosh regalim, it's a specific order. The order is Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos. So let's say somebody makes a donation, makes an adava, a pledge before Sukkos, he really has four Yom Tovim. If he makes before Shavuos, he has five Yom Tovim. If he makes before Pesach, he has three Yom Tovim. That's what it means, Ul regalim. V'amrin and l'mlochim mai. And understanding the Mishnah, what does it mean l'mlochim? L'mai hilchus, so what does the Mishnah mean? And Amar of Chizda L'shtaris, that, as we said a moment ago, when Rosh Chodesh Nisan comes, it's considered year two, even though the king was only a king for a couple days before. But Tanan, but we continue learning that Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Becha B'Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah L'Shanim, the year begins on Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, and we'll explain that in a moment more, U'L'Shmitim, that Shmita is counted from Rosh Hashanah. Verminin, and understanding this rule, the Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah asks, L'shanim l'mai, what does the Mishnah mean? L'mai hilchasa. V'am Rav Chizda explains, L'shtaris. That it's meant that when a shtar is written, we use Rosh Chodesh Tishrei as the new year. So we obviously have an immediate question. Kash shtaris ahadadi. First, the Mishnah says we start counting Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And then it says we start counting Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. And the way it's responded to is Kalamalch Yisrael, Kalamalch of the Kavim. There's a difference if we're counting for the Jewish monarchy or the non-Jewish monarchy. Lamalki of the Kavim at Tishrei Meninan. For the Malki of the Kavim, we go from Tishrei. Lamalch Yisrael, Menissa Meninan. For the Malki Yisrael, we start from Nissan. Why do Klai Yisrael start in Nissan? Because Nissan is the month where Klai Yisrael left Mitzrayim. It's the month where we became an independent nation, and that's why that's when the monarchy of Klai Yisrael is considered to have begun by Nisan. For the rest of the world, we go according to the creation of the world, which was in Tishrei. V'nan, hashtem et Tishrei meninan. Now we, says the Gemara, based on that Mishnah, all of our shtaris go from Tishrei. That makes the Gemara its point, v'isak adat t'plitzis mitzrayim meninan. If what Rav Achba Yaakov said is correct. That there's a possibility that we don't count from Melochim, from any government, but rather we count from Yetzias Mitzrayim. Certainly, if we're counting from Yetzias Mitzrayim, what should be the starting date? What should be the starting month? Menissen be'inan l'mimni. We should start counting from Nissen. Yet the Mishnah Masechet Rosh Hashanah clearly teaches us that we start by Tishrei. Why? Because Shema Minah, l'malchi Yavon meninan, we count from the Malchi Yavon. And therefore, the Havamina that Rav Achba Yaakov had, that perhaps this shtar was dated based on Yetzias Mitzrayim, and indeed was a shtar mocher, is incorrect. Because nobody uses the Yetzias Mitzrayim system, the Malchi Yavin system is used Shema Mina. And Taisus makes a very important point, La'alocha L'maisa. Taisus says, everything that we discussed in today's shiur could have easily been avoided. If, when the shtar was written, and the date that the year was written, they should have written in L'malcha Yavin. Why didn't they write in the words L'malcha Yavin? Says Taisus, because since, as our Gemara just taught us, they always wrote shtaris based on the dating system of L'malcha Yavin, it wasn't necessary to say L'malcha Yavin. It's self-understood. Where is it relevant? When we write a shtar nowadays, we use the Jewish year, Tavshanayin, Tavshanayin Aleph. The halach is, when we write Tavshan Ayin, we don't have to write Tavshan Ayin, Labrius Oilam. We just write Tavshan Ayin. why don't we write Labrius Olam? Since it's understood and it's accepted that when we write a shtar, for at least for not for for Jewish purposes, for our religious purposes, we always use the Jewish year. We don't have to say Labrius Olam. It's obviously it means Labrius Olam. Although, I don't want to go into the discussion now, there are those that always write Labrius Olam. The reason they write Labrius Olam is because it really, there is a question connected to what we learned in the previous year, where we had a lengthy discussion in the previous year when Shemitah is. And if we really were to follow the maskana of yesterday's shir, then the years that we hold as Shemitah are incorrect. And the reason we don't follow that system, that as the Gemara taught us in the previous year, is because we have a whole different way of counting when the world was created. Because actually, on Rosh Hashanah is when Adam HaRishon was created. The world was begun 5 days. Adam HaRishon was on the sixth day of Bris Olam. You all remember Chumash. The world was already 5 days old before Adam HaRishon was created on Rosh Hashanah. And we follow that system. And that's why that was already very much consistent with what we just learned. The day that Adam HaRishon was born, was created, was already year two. Because the world started 5 days before. And we just learned that once part of the year passes, and you have a new Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, a new Rosh Hashanah, it's already year two. That's why our dating of the Shemitah system is not consistent with what we learned in the previous year. We learned in the Mishnah that one of the holidays of the Akum was Yom Genusya Shemachayim. Ask me, Ma'ev Yom Genusya, what does that mean? Ma'ev Yom Genusya Shemachayim? Omer, Yehuda, Yom Shemamidim Ba'ev Dekhomes Malkum. It's the day that they inaugurate a new king. Ask the Gemara, V'tanya Yom Genusya, V'yom Shemamidim Ba'ev Malkum. It seems to be two separate things. Answer the Gemara, L'kasha. Had the day that he is inaugurated is called Yom Genusya. Had the Bray, if he's, what the kings would normally do, is that they would have their sons be their successors, and to make sure that that happened, they would name their son as their successors while they were still alive, and therefore when they got the other ministers to agree that their son should succeed them, they made it into a holiday. Ask the Gemara, Umimukmi Malka ba Malka, was the system in Rome that sons succeeded their fathers? V'tanin Rabbi Yossi, the Pasuk says in Ovadia, regarding Rome, Hine Kotan Satiha Begoyim. The Pasuk says that Rome is considered a cotton. Why? Sheim Meshivin Melech Bemelech. Their sons weren't their successors. And there's a very powerful vart from the Chasam Sofer, from the Mesh Chachma, in explaining this Gemara. They say that what is the difference between Klal Yisrael and the Akum? In our culture, there's nothing more important than chinuch, how we raise our children. What is the testimony that parents have properly raised their children? That when their children could be their successors, if you're a Rav and your son could succeed in your Rabbonis, that means that you have been successful. And that's what Klal Yisrael is all about. Whereas by the Akum, the Romans weren't successful in their chinuch. That's why the Chasam Sofer says we find that the Torah lists eight successive kings of Edom, and none of them were sons. And that's why the Meshech Chachma says, Akum the king, the Pasuk always refers to the king of Edom as Melech Edom, not the son of the previous kings, because they aren't successful in their chinuch. Bozi Atma Oid, the Pasuk goes on in describing the Romans as Bozi, the people that are degraded. She'elam like ksav loy loshen. They don't have their own ksav and loshen. So Taisus asks that they're not the only nation that we find don't have their own language. B'nai Yishmol, B'nai Amon, Umayev, they all have their own, they weren't there when the world, by Dara Flog, we all remember the Parasha, and Parashas Noyah, that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu divided the 70 nations with 70 languages, and we don't find that there were 70 languages that these nations were there. So why is the Pasuk singling out the Romans? So Taisa says two terutzim. One terutz is that the Romans had two types of languages. There was one language used by the upper class, and one language used by the rest of the people. And that's very embarrassing that the entire country doesn't speak the entire language. Another teretz, Taisa says, very interesting teretz. Taisa says that indeed, as we said a moment ago, the Ishmaelim and Ammon and Moav all did not have their own languages. What happened, he says? He says, as we just said, by the Dor HaFlog, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had 70 languages for the 70 nations. Not all of those nations survived. So Ammon, Moav, Yishmael took languages from nations who perished, and their languages were no longer in use, and they took those languages and adapted them for themselves. What did the Romans do? The Romans didn't take a language from a nation that no longer existed. They took a language from a nation that already existed. Bozi atam oid, to steal a language from another nation that's already using a language, bozi atam oid, is extremely embarrassing. So here we see that the sons weren't made kings. So how can we say that Yom Genusia, Yom Shemamita Melech, one is when he becomes king, and one is when his son becomes king? Elamai, Yom Genusia. Yom Genusia means Yom Haleda, the king's birthday. Ask the Gemara, how can we say Yom Genusia means the king's birthday? But Tanya the Braisa says, Yom Genusia v'Yom Haleda. So he says, his birthday is already mentioned. Answers the Gemara, Lakasha. Haddei Habrei. Yom Genusia means his birthday. Yom Haleda means his son's birthday. Ask the Gemara, but there's another Braisa that says, Yom Genusia Shaloi, his birthday. Yom Genusia Shal Benoi, his son's birthday. His Genusia and his son's Genusia. Yom Haleda Shaloi, his birthday. Yom Haleda Shal Benoi and his son's birthday. So we clearly see that Genusia has nothing to do with birthdays. Elamai Yom Genusia, we go back to our original question, Teretz. Yom Genusia means Yom Shemidim and Malcolm. If it means Yom Shemidim and Malcolm, then we have a Brice that says Yom Genusia, the Yom Shemidim and Malcolm, for Loikasha. Hard the day, hard the break. We go back to our original Teretz. One refers to his inauguration, and the other is when they agreed that his son should be the Melech. Ivi Kashloch, as we just finished learning, that in Rome, Loimukmi Makaba Malka, that normally they don't have a son succeed his father. Answers the Gemara, if the father, the king, asks permission from the authorities and they give it, then the son can become king. And in fact, we find such a his incident. Kigoin Asterius by Antoninus. Asterius was the son of Antoninus, who was the Roman Caesar, the Moloch. His father wanted him to succeed him. Amal Antoninus Larebi, and as we're going to learn in Amal Beis, Antoninus and Rebbe enjoyed a very special relationship. And Antoninus asked Rebbe, two things I want to do. Being at the Imlach Siris Beri, I want my son Asiris to succeed me, Tachtoi, being at the Imlach Asir Beri, Tachtoi, and I also want, with this Avet Tveri Klanyam. As we're going to learn in Amal Beis, Antoninus spent a lot of time learning Torah by Rebbe. And he came to the recognition of the importance of learning Torah. Tveri was a city of Talmidei Chachamim. And since it was a city of Talmidei Chachamim, he wanted to make it a tax-free zone, that the people who lived there shouldn't have to pay tax. But now Antoninus says to Rebbe, V'emelo chodob, if I'll ask the authorities for permission for one thing, avdi, they'll do it for me. Trey, but if I ask them for two things, loy avdi, it's too much to ask for. So what do you recommend? So says the Gemara, what Rebbe did was, Isa Gavre Akve Chavre, he took one person sitting on top of another person, V'yavle Yoinele Biyadei, and he put a dove into the hands of the person sitting on top, V'omele Tato, and he said to the person on the bottom, Eimele Eila, tell the person on top, the Mifrich Minyoy De Yoina, he shall let the Yoina free. Amma, so Antoninus understood what Rebbe meant. Shmamina hoch kamali. What he meant was as follows. At boimine, you go and ask from the authorities, the Saris Berei Yimla Tachtoi, that your son Asaris should succeed you. And then, once you get their consent to that, Ve'emle Lasaris, then you should tell Asaris the Avit Tarver Klanya. You give him the instruction that once he becomes king, he should make a Tveria tax-free zone. Why didn't Rebbe say it explicitly? Why did he only do it through a mashal? So Mefarshim explained that Rebbe was concerned that the authorities would hear him giving this advice and they would be upset with it. So that's why he only said it with a mashal, he didn't say it explicitly. I saw an incredible tshuva from the Ritvaz based on this Gemara. The Ritvaz says, he was an American, Chicago, many, many years ago, and he says he got a question asked to him from the community in Rochester. I don't know if it's Rochester, New York, or Rochester, Minnesota, where there was a yeshiva in that community, and the yeshiva was short of funds, and they wanted to put pushkas, they wanted to put boxes to collect stocker for the yeshiva in all of the shuls in the community. Until then, the only pushkas that they had in the shul were for Remei Balanes, for people, for poor people in Eretz Yisrael. And the Gaboim of Remei Balanes were upset that if they're going to put now more pushkas in the shul for this yeshiva, they'll take away from their funds. And they came and they asked the question of the Ritvaz, what should they do? And the Ritvaz says, absolutely, they should put out these pushkas for the yeshivas. And he said very simply, he said, because if there won't be yeshivas, there won't be a continuation of Jewish, without Jewish education, there won't be any continuity. And Remei Balanes will have nothing, because there won't be anybody attending the shuls. He says, where does he learn that lesson from? He quotes our Gemara. He says, our Gemara says that what did Rebbe tell Antoninus? You make sure that your son succeeds you. Once you make son that you're sure your son succeeds you, then all of your plans he will implement. Here too, the first thing you have to make sure is that there's a continuity, he tells the community, of the Jewish people. The only way we could have a continuity of the Jewish people is by having Jewish education. Once we'll have Jewish education, then all the Jewish causes will be properly funded. Continues the Gemara. Amalei, Antoninus sends a message to Rebbe. Mitzar lichshuvi Rome. The people, the authorities in Rome are bothering me. So what Rebbe did was, Maile lelagina, he brought Antoninus into a garden. Kalyoyma okalei pugla. And every day he pulled out a radish. Mimishra. From Mishra kamei. From the row in front of him. Amar, shmamina. So Antoninus understood what Rebbe's message was. Hach kamali. At kotol chad chad minayu, kill one of them off at a time, v'letuzgarba bakula, instead of killing them all off. Because if you kill them all, then they will rebel against you. Ask the Gemara if that's what he meant, v'lemele meime behedja. Why don't Rebbe just give him this advice? Why do you have to show it to him with the radishes? Omer, shemach shemiroimi. I have to be concerned that if the Romans hear that I give Antoninus this advice, mitzarele. They will be upset at me, and I'll be in trouble. Ask the Gemara, so v'lei malei b'lachash. Why didn't Rebbe just give this advice to Antoninus quietly? Answers the Gemara, b'shem d'ksiv, the pasuk says, ki oif ha-shamayach yolech sakol. You have to be concerned that anything you say is quietly, there are no secrets. I sort of, Tvar explains the Gemara, that what does it mean, that the birds will repeat what you said? Sometimes a person has shadim or malachi chavola that want to do bad to him, and they will be the ones that will cause that if he said something, that the secret should be repeated. Havelai Hubarta. Antoninus had a daughter, the Shmar Gira, whose name was Gira, of the Surah, and she had an adulterous relationship. Shad, I'm going to first learn the Gemara the way Rashi explains it, and then I'll tell you Taisus Pshat. Shad delay Gargira. So Antoninus sent a message to Rebbe that my daughter Gargira has fouled other men. She's had this inappropriate relationship. Shardalai, so Rebbe sent back to Antoninus Kuzbarta, which Rashi says to mean, said Kuzbarta, kill your daughter. Shardalai, so he sent back to Rebbe Karti. The way Mefarshim explained, apparently by this time his son had not died already. And this was his only surviving child. He says, and if this child is killed, I'm completely cut off. I have no children. Shalach lei chasa. So he said, if so, have rachmanis on her. Taisus is very bothered with Rashi's pshat, because Taisus says it's inconceivable that Rebbe would have advised Antoninus to kill his daughter. And moreover, if that was his advice, why did he change his mind? So that's why Taisus explains that Antoninus sent to Rebbe Gargira that she had this adulterous relationship. Shadlai kus barta means have rachmanis on your daughter. However, Antoninus misunderstood what Rebbe meant, and he thought that Rebbe meant kill your daughter, which would bother him. So Rebbe said, chasa, I never meant that you should kill your daughter. I always meant chasa, that you should have rachmanis on her. Says the Gemara, kol yoyma have a shadlai dahava pricha be matrasa. Every day, Antoninus would send to Rebbe gold pieces in a bag, in a leather bag, for chita pamayu, and there was wheat covering it. Amlai amta chita le Rebbe. He would tell his messengers, he didn't want that the messengers should think that he was sending gold to Rebbe, so he would say, deliver this wheat to Rebbe. Amlai Rebbe le tzrichna. So Rebbe sent Tantaninus the following message, I don't need this. Isli tuva. I have plenty money myself. Amla lahavlaman the basroch. This money should be left over for your children. The yahavil basroi, that they will give this money to my children. The osa basroch or the osa minayu. That your children, my children, says Antoninus to Rebbe, will subjugate your children and they'll have money to pay him off. As becomes very clear in this Gemara, Antoninus was a person, even though he was the Roman emperor, who was a good person. And in fact, Tosfos quotes a very interesting medrash, how it came that Antoninus should be such a good person. Tosfos says that when Rebbe was born, there was a decree that no one should make a mila, should make a bris on their child. Rebbe's parents, of course, made a bris mila on their child. And the government officials became aware that that's what happened. And they sent authorities, they sent police to go see what was going on. Rebbe's mother was aware of what was happening. So she switched babies with Antoninus' mother. And Antoninus, while she was in the home of Rebbe's parents, so then when they came, Antoninus was a goy, and they came and they saw he didn't have a bris. While Antoninus was at the home of Rebbe's mother, he nursed from Rebbe's mother. And from here we see the power of kosher food. He nursed from kosher food, and that had such a positive influence on him that he acted this way his entire life. And as Mefarshim go on to explain, why did Antoninus act this way, subservient to Rebbe? One pshat is, we know the Pasuk says, V'rav Yavet Soyer. The Pasuk says that the older brother, Antoninus was a descendant of Esav, will accept the domination of his younger brother Yaakov. Another pshat is that he wanted to come to Olam Haba. How is he going to come to Olam Haba? By serving Rebbe, that would be his entrance into Olam Haba. Says the Gemara. Havalei Ahina Karta. There was this tunnel. Dava Olam Beisei LeBeis Rebbe. That went directly from the home of Antoninus to the home of Rebbe. Rebbe lived in Tzipori, Antoninus lived in Tveria. Kol yom ava mais trei avdi, every day Antoninus would take two slaves with him. Chat katla de bei Rebbe, one he would kill as soon as they arrived at Rebbe's home. Chat katla baba de beisi, and one he would kill when he got back home. One he killed both of them together. Pasha pshat is because he needed at least one person to walk with him. Another pshat is if he would kill both of them, they may rebel against him. If he only kills one at a time, they won't rebel against him. Ask Tosfos. A goy is not allowed to kill anybody. We've discussed many times the Zayin Mitznei Noyach. So how was Antoninus killing people? So I saw two answers. One answer is that even though a goy is not allowed to kill anybody, but when it's a situation of self-defense, habolach hargacha hashkum hargoy. Antoninus was aware that if these avodim would tell people that he was learning Torah with Rebbe, his life would be in danger. And that's why in self-defense he killed them. Not upshot that these were people that were deserving death anyway. This was the way this was how he did it. Amma lay, and Antoninus said to Rebbe, Bidin dasina, when I come to you, I don't want anybody else there. I don't want anybody to know I'm coming to you. Yomichad, one day Antoninus is coming to learn Torah by Rebbe, Ashkelah Rav Chanina Bachama Davi Yosef, and he finds Rav Chanina Bachama sitting there. Amar, she says to Rebbe, Lo yamin alach, have I not told you, be'idna da sina, when I come to you, lo nishka gavakamach, no one should be here. Amar less than bar inish. He's not a regular person. He's a malach. And like the Mefarshim explained, technically Rebbe was correct, because as we'll see, he had the characteristics of a malach. Amlai lahu avdet. So Antoninus wanted to test him. So he told Rav Chanina Bachama, go tell the Evid that the Gani Ababa that's sitting and sleeping at the entrance of the door, the Kohen Velezel, he should get up and go. Actually, he was dead, because as we just said, Antoninus would kill an Evid at the entrance to Rebbe's house. Also Rav Chanina Bachama, Ashkei Davakotl. And Rav Chanina Bachama indeed found him dead. Amar Hechi Evid, exactly what should I do now? If I'm going to come back and report to Antoninus that he's dead, the rule is, a person should not be the bearer of bad news. If I should just ignore this entire directive, I can't do that either. Because the king gave me a directive, how could I ignore what he requested of me? Boy, so he davened, and he had tchias amesim. Shadre, and this guard, this attendant, was just able to walk away. And he came back and told that to Antoninus that I sent the guard home. Omar, at this point, says Antoninus, Yudana zutid ispuchu mechai mesim. I see that even the smallest amongst you has the ability to be mechai mesim. But he still asks the Rebbe, Minna, beidna da sinna, I still ask you that when I come, lo ishkech inish kamach, nobody else should be here. Says the Gemara, every day, Antoninus would serve Rebbe. Machle, he would give him to eat. Mashkele, he would give him to drink. Haboy Rebbe lemesik lepurya. Rebbe wanted to climb onto his bed. Have a gochen kame purya. Antoninus would bend down in front of the bed. Amale saklevei, climb on me lepurya to your bed. Amale, Amar, so Rebbe said, lav arich ara lezuzuzi b'machusu kolahai. To use the king as a stepping stool is very inappropriate. So to which Antoninus says, "Mi yisemene matzah tachtech l'olam haba." Halvai, I could be your stepping stool in the olam haba. Amalei, asin al almadase. So he asked. Antoninus asks Rebbe, "Will I have olam haba?" Amalei in. He said yes. Amalei v'ksiv lo yisar l'beis Esav. No, there won't be anybody left from Esav. So he said, "V'osem Esav." Only somebody who follows in the ways of Esav. You clearly, and don't follow in those ways, you will have Olam Haba. Tanya Mehofer, the Pasuk says, Lo yisar lebeis Esav, yochel koil, everybody will be excluded. Tamaloimer, the Esav, the Oisamas Esav. Only somebody who acts that way. Amoi, Vaksiv, Shama Edoi Malcher Vinsia, that in Gehenim you will find all of the kings and all of the leaders of Edoi. Amalei Malcher, the kings, have v'loy kol melacha, not all of its kings. Kol nesiya, v'loy kol sarel, not all of its ministers. So Tosfos explains, interestingly, the second to the bottom Tosfos, that says as follows, that originally the Roman system was that they had a king. But they realized that the king, just having a king, was a very dictatorial system. So they did something else. They would just appoint a leader, and that leader would have 300 advisors just to avoid a system of a dictator. Tanya Mehochi, Melachel, its kings are in Gechenim, Vloko Melachel. Kol Nesia, Vloko Surel. Melachel, Vloko Melachel, when we say that not all of the kings of Rome are in Gehenim, Prat, it comes to exclude Antoninus Basivirus, that he was a tzaddik, as we're learning, and didn't go to Gehenim. Kol Nesia, Vloko Surel, who is it come to exclude? Prat l'ketir b'shalom. Says the Gemara, ketir b'shalom mayhi. What's the story of ketir b'shalom? Says the Gemara, that he kissed her that was son of Yudai. There was this king, the Caesar, that hated the Jews. Amalei l'chshiv de malchusa. So he consulted with his senators. Misha olay nima b'raglev. If somebody has a growth on his foot, what should he do? Yek the end of yichya. Should he cut it off and like that survive? Or yinechen of yitztar, or should he just leave it? Amalei, so they all told him, Yekdiyan of Yechya, he should cut it off. And that was a mashal to the Jewish people that he considered a bad growth. Amala Ketiba Shalom. Ketiba Shalom disagreed. He says, Hada Delayach Lelkula. You can't anyway eradicate all of the Jews. The Ksiv, because the Pasuk says, Ki Ka'aba Rucha Shashmayim Purashti Eschem. My comma. What does the Pasuk mean? Ilema the Badrusumber Abaruchas, that Klal Yisrael are found all over the world. So the wording of the Pasuk is imprecise. Haika Abaruchas, Le Abaruchas Mibayle. That's what the Pasuk should have said. Rather, what he meant was, Shem Shi Eshel Oilam Beloy Ruchas, just like the world can't exist without a wind, Ki Echshali Oilam Beloy Yisrael. Klal Yisrael cannot exist without, the world cannot exist without Klal Yisrael. And as the Mashal explains, it wasn't that he was trying to teach the Caesar Psukim in the Torah. Psukim in the Torah don't make much of an impression on him. He was saying, it's not coincidental that Jews are all over the world. It's very specific, because what Kadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us is trying to show you that you can never completely eradicate the Jewish people. Void. And therefore, he said to him, if you will try to eradicate the Jewish people, Karloch Malch Sektiyah. You're just going to be a king that's missing a part of his population. Amalei, so the king said to him, Mei Meshapa Kamrit, you're saying well. However, me called the Zoch Lamalka, whoever prevails over the king, Shadlei Kumya, Chalila, he's put into a round room. If I should say it's a round room where there was no air, so he suffocated, or it was a house full of sand where he was put to sink into the sand. Kavanikn Leva Oslin, as they were taking this Ketiba Shalom to be killed, Amlai Hitumrinasa, there was a woman that said they violate ilfa the Ozla Bloy Mirsa. What was it for a boat that goes without paying the toll? If a boat doesn't pay the toll, it won't be let in the tax, it won't be let into the port. So too, you're going into the next world, but you won't be allowed into Olam Haba because you didn't have a bris mila. So what he did was, Nofal Reshtarsa, Ketiba Shalom immediately fell on to his arla and kata. And he cut off his arla. Aye, what is the point of cutting off an arla if you're a guy? So Mefarshim explained at the same moment that he cut off his arla, he accepted upon himself Yiddishkeit, Judaism. Amma, Yavis Michsi, Chafis Favis. Now I've paid my tax, that I had my mila, and I could go into the Olam Hamas. Ki kashadulei, as they were throwing him into this house, Amakal Nichsei, all of my possessions should be given to Rabbi Akiva v'Chaverav. So the question was, how should they divide up the possessions? Yotz Rabbi Akiva v'Darsh, the pasuk says regarding the lechem upon him, V'hayel Aaron Labanov, Mechtzel Aaron or Mechtzel Labanov. When the pasuk says that the lechem upon him should be divided amongst Aaron and his children, it means that half should be given to Aaron and half should be given to his children. Here too, half of his positions should be given to Bekiva and half to everybody else. Yotze Baskov Omra, Ketiv Bashalom Zumin L'chai Elohim Haba. Ketiv Bashalom will have Elohim Haba. Bacha Rebbe V'Omar, Yesh Kona B'Elohim Sho'achas, Yesh Kona Elohim V'Kam Shinim. A Tanina Shamshel Rebbe, a Taninus, as we learned, served Rebbe, Atgarkin Shamshel Rav, Kishochim N'Taninus, Omra Rebbe N'Sparadi Chavila. The special relationship has collapsed. And when Adrachim was Nifter, when he died, Amar Rav Nispar de Chavila. The Mefarshim discussed at great length what the Gemara says, Yesh Koina Elomoi B'Sho'achas. What's difficult is why did Rebbe cry when he said this? So Chedush Erim says a beautiful pshat. He says, from here you see the power of 1 hour. He did a mitzvah only for 1 hour. And that 1 hour brought into Olam Haba. We waste so much time that in that time we could do so much good. Another pshat that I saw is that he was crying because really he didn't get an easy Olam Haba. He said the Olam Haba he got was only for 1 hour, for one mitzvah. He cried because had he done many mitzvahs, his portion in Olam Haba would have been so much greater. But then there's a very beautiful verse from the Baal Shem Tov. Baal Shem Tov says there was once a person who was a wagon driver, drove horses. And it was Friday afternoon, and they were on the road, and it was almost Shabbos. And they weren't near the city. So what he did was he started slapping the horses that should drive faster to get to town in time for Shabbos. And the horses died. And then he died from Agmas Nefesh, that his Panasa, his horses died. He came to Olam Emes, and they started doing a Din V'Cheshbon with him. And He was a very, very ignorant, plain person, didn't learn Torah, didn't do mitzvahs. All of a sudden, one malach comes, the malach that represents Shabbos, and says, this person, he gave up his life for Shabbos. He deserves Olam Haba. But what happens on Olam Haba, says the Baal Shem? What happens on Olam Haba is people sit and learn Torah, people daven. He says, you can't put a Baal Gol in such an Olam Haba. He does not learn, he does not daven. So the Olam Haba they gave him was, they made for him a beautiful wagon with four beautiful horses, and he sits on that wagon. That's his Olam Haba. So Rebbe says, Ketiv HaShalom is deserving of Olam Haba. What kind of Olam Haba could he have? He can't have an Olam Haba of Torah. He can't have an Olam Haba of mitzvahs. He was a guy his whole life. Bacher Rebbe. Rebbe cried, you already get an Olam Haba. What kind of Olam Haba should you get?